What up, Side Dish listeners? Annie here. Before we get into today's show, just wanted to remind everybody that we will be recording live on April 4th at 5:30 at Dryland Distillers. Come on out, check us out. We don't promise really quality content, but the drinks are great, the company is better. April 4th, 5:30. We'll see you then.
Hit it.
Hello and welcome to Side Dish, your podcast about long and everything that you want to know and very little that you need to know. I am Brady Stone.
I'm Annie Larder.
And this is
Shaquille Dalal.
Yeah, there he is.
What up, Shaquille?
You did
guys,
it.
We didn't even check levels.
Did you not?
Annie had a drink before this.
Yeah, Annie's
so here
been.
We go.
She's like semi-observing, not drinking, and
you know,
apparently she's three sheets in right now. I can't tell what's going on here.
It was one sheet, but it's juicy bits.
It's a big
so it's
sheet.
Strong. Shaquille, you know what we usually do to test levels?
What do we do?
You tell me what you had for breakfast.
Are we still going or are we just...
Yeah, we're going. We're
okay.
going. But I do need to know what you had for breakfast.
I had 2 cups of black coffee because I just really like coffee and I'm too lazy to make breakfast.
Yeah, there you go.
You didn't have any more than that?
No, that's what I got. I did have like a banana at lunch.
Is that your typical breakfast?
That is my typical breakfast.
That is... That's pretty slight.
I had two muffins this morning. And that was, I don't even know, three. That's all I've had to eat all day, I just realized.
Yeah.
Just two muffins?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm getting a little shaky.
I'm usually like you, but today I had like this like tofu vegetable wrap thing for lunch. Cause,
nice.
Yeah,
did you cook that?
Yeah, because I had a lot of vegetables at home and
I'm trying
to like eat more vegetables. And so this was my like, I'm hungry. I should eat the thing that I told myself I should eat.
Right.
Good job.
That's not a typical day for me, though.
Okay, but Shaquille, who are you?
I am the president of Launch Longmont Housing, a grassroots organization working on lowering the cost of housing in Longmont.
Launch with all caps, may it be noted.
Yes.
They
are there. Yes.
Yeah.
Launch.
So you're shouting.
Yeah. Maybe we should have put an exclamation point after it.
Yeah, really. Well, the all caps kind of achieves that.
Gives it away.
Yeah, great.
Like my mom on the computer 10 years ago. I love the woman to death, and she's figured it out. But for a while, it was just caps lock is cruise control for cool. And we're locking in at this speed. And it was like, Mom, you're yelling at me. She's like, she didn't get it. And then once she got it, she's like, I'll just use type like a normal person. And she's adorable, and she did that. So, yeah, no. So we'll get into an interview with Shaquille later.
Yeah.
This was,
I literally don't really know that much about it, so I'm excited to learn more.
Well, I think I was looking at your website earlier today, so there was
fantastic
answers and stuff, yeah. Not that that helps, because I don't remember anything ever. I got a good Twitter joke.
Hear it.
You want to hear it? Okay. So crows are taking over American cities, so says...
like crows, like ravens, crows?
Yeah.
Crows, okay.
Squawk, squawk. And this is an article in The Atlantic. That's the headline. And the guy's response is this what they mean by rising murder rates in the cities? I was looking for the crickets.
I was trying to get the crickets.
Oh,
I forgot what it was.
That's a good one. Okay. So I've heard tell that there's a new...
I actually didn't get that.
You didn't get that? When you put crows together, it's called a murder.
Oh, I didn't know
the
that.
Collective noun for crows is a murder.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's a good joke.
Okay.
Like
a flock of crows.
Yeah, a flock of crows.
It was a funny joke. People will laugh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's it's right up my street. I love that kind of just, I love it. Anyway, I think there's a new Thai restaurant on 17th and Hoover. 303. Thai 303.
Okay, great.
I think it's up by that Ziggy's, the little drive through thing.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No idea. Oh, where like, yeah. Okay, sure. Where the pizza place used to be. Isn't there still pizza or was pizza?
You know, I don't know a lot about the pizza locations in town.
Too much gluten.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, literally any is past my threshold.
On the note of restaurants, I think there's already a new restaurant moving into Cycle Hops.
Is there?
An Indian restaurant.
Another
one? No kidding.
Yep, called Namaste, Momo, and Curry House.
Oh, I saw this. Yeah, I saw that one too. I was going to say, I had that. I didn't realize that's where that was going to go.
Yeah. Right where Cycle Hops was. And I had a listener, Eric, shout out, who said, for sure, that's where Chubb Burger was. For sure, they've not been there 10 years.
The Lunata, Cafe Lunata.
Cafe Lunata.
We're jumping around.
Sorry. Listeners, if you didn't listen last episode, Cafe Lunata closed. Cycle Hops closed. And we're talking about, you know, who's going to be stepping
just
in.
Whichever one pops into Annie's mind at any given moment.
I know. Yeah. You're with me, right?
Yeah, I got you. Okay. I knew where you were at, but like that's the way it works up here. So I'm there already. yeah. So Cafe Lunata, and then Cafe Lunata is not being taken over to do another Mexican thing. They're
right.
being taken mm-hmm. over to do something else.
Indian. Momo. Yeah. Okay. Momo is like Indian version of fried dough, right?
It's like a dumpling, I would say.
Dumpling, right? Dumpling. It's like every culture has their dough that they do something with. Cooked dough.
Yeah. I think this is like I think they're supposed to be steamed. So
steamed, right? Like dumpling.
So
yeah.
I'm Indian, but I think momos are more Nepali because like I see them at like northern Indian places.
That's true. Yeah. I have a client right now. We're looking for some Indian space for an Indian restaurant and he's doing momos too. And I think he's Nepalese technically.
Sure.
Anyway.
I was thinking that when you said a new restaurant was already going in Cycle Hops.
Yeah.
That was going to be another Indian place, but we don't know that the...
No, but I know that Cycle Hops is already negotiating with another potential tenant. So
I think it's kind of a neat spot. Like it's, you know, I mean, you can get there on trails and stuff if you're clever about it.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I mean, you can get over like Oscar Blues and that stuff over there.
You can cycle to Cycle Hops?
Yeah.
That's good.
It's really not too bad.
Okay. It would be sad if you couldn't do that.
It'd be kind of silly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I heard a presentation from RTD yesterday talking about the corridor, all the improvements they're doing on the 119 corridor,
mm-hmm.
basically. And I think we talked about this last
119
year.
119 or 187?
119. Diagonal. And basically bus rapid transit, you know, adding like lanes and ways for the bus to kind of like move. They do all these like bus rapid transit is interesting because they do things to make the buses more rapid.
Rapid, yeah.
But it's simple things like
adding
a lane where you can like bypass all of the cars sitting at the red light
right.
And then changing the light for the bus just a couple seconds earlier so they get ahead of it or whatever. And anyway, all these improvements and a lot of them involve just more bike friendly changes from mm-hmm. Nelson and Airport onto the diagonal, like so that more bikes can more easily commute between Boulder and Longmont.
That would be lovely because it's a bit of a horror show on 119. If you want a bicycle on 119, you take your life in your own hands.
Yeah, there's no way you would catch me on a bike on 119 under
no,
any circumstances.
But how far does the Lobo Link go? Like how far can you do path from Boulder to Longmont?
I think you can take the Lobo
Longmont to Boulder.
From Longmont to Boulder.
Yeah, so you can be conceivably on path the whole time. Do you have to like go?
It's not like paved though.
Oh,
or wasn't
well,
when I was
like you could not plausibly commute on that. It
right.
would be pretty tough.
I know someone who did his e-bike a lot, but I don't know if it was path.
An e-bike makes everything easier.
E-bike is up. And people should get e-bikes and commute on it. I mean
if you have a fat bike with the, you know, the snow tires, you could whatever, you go overland if you want. But like you know, it's next to fields and stuff. I don't think a lot of it's paved because last time I was out there it was like gravelly, and then when it got wet, it's like that's my tire noises through.
Right.
That's
okay.
what bikes
so
sound
I think
like.
Some of these improvements do involve, and these are happening, folks. Like they have the funding for all of this. Like this stuff is happening in the next 18
time.
Months. Like
I'm unbelievably excited for this.
It's going to be a lot of construction. It's going to be real crappy for a little while, but once it's improved, I mean, the idea is to make it easier for alternative transit options.
I mean, can you imagine how awesome it is going to be able to casually go to Boulder and not have to worry about being able to drive home at the end?
It's true. I only do that like twice a year. Meaning
but
where,
you, but now
where
you might do it more often.
Transit.
Like,
yeah, no, totally. And I'm all about taking the bus like late at night and it's nice. I prefer it.
I mean, and this is part of why people are like, oh, you go. It's like, yeah, like if I want to go out and have a nice meal and, you know, you have more than a drink, it's like, well, then
right.
you've got to get home. And if I'm more than.
But I have to say, on a practical level, like I go to Boulder 3 times a week or 4 times a week. And I granted, I have to like kind of drive to properties and stuff, but like it's so impractical during the day. Like I have appointments to be at and fine, I'm down with, you know, at night when I go out and I can plan it a little bit and like my like schedule is fluid. But where I can't really wrap my head around it is the reality of movement and working during
mm-hmm.
the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love it if they made that transit corridor actually meaningful because my wife used to ride the bus and it'd be like, okay. Like,
right.
It's a dedication.
But like who goes – like I feel like people who go into the office or commute rather to Boulder aren't – you're not going and sitting in an office all day and coming home. You're working from home or you're – it's kind of like bygone days a little bit. People I feel like – I'd be curious. Like who are the people moving back and forth in their cars –
on the diagonal and why do they need to be in their cars?
So the U.S. Census actually does have data on like this where they'll like, you know, collect like origin destination data for people and like what they use their cars for. And they will often use data like that for transit planning like this because – I mean, hopefully they figured out that this is going to be justified. I can't say that I've read a report.
Yeah, there's
or something,
some big studies that they're basing all of this on, but yeah.
So, I mean, presumably, and like part of the important part of having something like BRT connecting two cities like Longmont and Boulder is that it, I mean, it's certainly part of it, but then there's got to be robust public transit on either end of that
too,
right?
That's the whole thing. And that is my issue, right? When you get there, it's like, oh, and I got to spend like another 20 minutes getting to where I need to go, which is not even that far from where I land or whatever.
I have lived in small cities that have public transit before, but the buses would have bike carriers on the front. Mm-hmm. So sometimes what people would do is if they needed to like bike to their destination is they would put their bike on the front of the bus 100%. And it was like 100% socially acceptable. It was great actually.
And these do. BRT all has – these regional buses do. It's pretty easy. Usually there's only like 3 slots and if they are full, they'll just throw it under the bus or whatever, which is pretty
– Start driving.
I mean whatever. It works. Not like –
And then I
– You wanted to get on this bus? Crinkle, crinkle, crinkle. Yeah.
And then I threw you under the bus. By deliberately misunderstanding what you're talking about. At any rate, I think that we could do better in the city as well to sort of address some of these things that we're talking about. Because I was talking – Shaquille's over here slamming his water bottle.
Yeah, that was real loud. Sorry.
But like I can't – from my house just to get to Target, and I don't live that far from Target. If I wanted to get a couple things from there or the grocery store, you have to get a crossover. And there's areas where you are genuinely, again, taking your life into your own hands just to get to Target. And it's like, okay. And then once you get to Target, what are you going to do with your bike? If you have a bike that you want to go to Target on so it's not a complete heap.
You're saying you can't park it? What do you mean?
It'll get ripped off.
Oh.
So the city actually does have an ordinance that requires bike parking in front of certain large businesses, but it is essentially unenforced.
Yeah.
Oh, but Target has bike parking.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Of course.
I'm pretty sure they do.
Little hoops.
But I'm not going to – what am I going to do? I could take my 1973 Raleigh over there, which is fine. But that's why I own that bike because bike theft is so prevalent.
So what
here.
Would you prefer, like being able to take it inside and park it?
I mean, if I took it inside – well, maybe. But if I took it inside, I don't think anybody would say anything. I've seen
I know,
some
but like what's the
stuff.
Ideal scenario?
Like some sort of locking situation that is isolated from the public or something because then people can't just – break in. They have a
caged in area?
Yeah, and they have a cage at the 6th and Kaufman area.
Mm,
there's cages there.
Mm.
It's something like just because you have to feel secure that you can take a bike that you are going to get to your destination on and get home with.
Right.
That you know, and it's like you don't want to take just a heap of junk that you're not comfortable. And if you take your e-bike or whatever and it's gone when you leave – why go?
Right. Okay, gotcha.
So I think like there's a bunch of steps to make that stuff better. And public transit's part of it. Bike connectivity is part of it. And I get so frustrated. I'm like, we need more lanes. And it's like, we need smaller cars and more ways to get around without.
Well, this is like so relevant to everything I think Launch is going to talk about today.
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, this is my jam. I don't know if you guys planned these stories just for me, but I'm excited.
You hear me complain about this stuff all the time.
Perennial
like,
gripe
my,
of Brady's.
Yeah, like.
Yeah.
And then like people are in – I was at East Hardware the other day and somebody starts backing out and I'm walking past and I'm just like, you know, because I got a big voice. I'm like, I'm a pedestrian in theory. I have the right of way. And this guy who must be in his 80s is like, what are you doing? It's like, what? Because the guy's in a car. I can't tell him not to run me over. And it's like, it's not really – he should be watching for me, not the other way. And it's like, it won't matter when you're flat. And it's like, yeah, I understand that. But meaning he gets to be a terrible driver for free. Like, what? And that's a lot of the person that, like, the mindset that people have. Once I'm in the car, like, I'm elevated this level above everybody else. And it's like, no, we should make sure that there's space. And this is why I'm such a – I'm so rabid about protected infrastructure for pedestrians and bicyclists. Because I've watched people drive two lanes. Like, I go to work and I take, like, 75th all the way down or whatever, 95th all the way down. And there'd be people with two wheels on the shoulder the entire time. Or I'll be on 3rd Street close to my house by the golf course. And there'll be people with two wheels in the bike lane.
I don't know why that bike lane exists west of Sunset, honestly.
It's I don't want to use it because it's horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I'm like, put the cars next to traffic and the bike lane away from traffic Because then, like, if somebody hits your car, I understand it's, yeah, that sucks. But it's a car. You can replace it.
Yeah.
If somebody breaks your legs off while they're driving by with
you
their massive
truck. You can replace your
legs. Sure.
I mean, my mom's had a lot of joints replaced. I bet you could do something
I'm
similar.
I'm going to be pretty much bionic by the time I die.
Cool. I'm here for it. Yeah. Anyway, soapboxes. I got one that was kind of funny. There was an event in Longmont on 420. Blaze it.
Is that the right one?
Yeah. Sure. I don't know. Called Clean and Green. Like, there you go.
Okay.
Shaquille reminded her that the soundboard exists.
I know. Thank you. I'm so happy. I'm excited.
So it's on 420 called Clean and Green. And I don't think that there's supposed to be a link there, but it feels like there is.
There's got to be.
You know? I don't know. But I looked at the thing, and it's just like kids clean up downtown, and it's like...
Oh, is it downtown cleanup for the spring? I love that event.
That's great. It's cool, but...
It's great. And it's on 420. It's on 420. Love it.
Is 420 also Earth Day?
It totally might be. And that might be why they're doing it that day. Earth Day 2020.
Also, if you want a community garden plot.
Nope, I'm just wrong then. Okay.
Close enough.
I mean, you know. Let's see. What day of the week is that? What day of the week is that, Brady?
I don't know, man. It's 420.
Okay.
Just to get
it's a holiday. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's totally a holiday.
420 is a Saturday.
Oh, yeah. So there you go. They have to do it on a Saturday. Otherwise, they might. It probably is in honor of Earth Day, which is Monday.
It's
but.
Like asking me what day of the week
is today.
A date is or what today is.
Yeah, what's today?
Like,
do you know?
Wednesday?
It's good.
Because we meet on Wednesdays.
It's good.
And it's the 28th because I have a grant due and I had to put a date on something today.
It is the 27th. Just
is it?
Yeah.
It is.
Cool.
Yeah, you just got an extra day on your grant.
An extra day. So that's – they had these – they were like doing these tests at one point for like the president, like the cognitive – and I'm like, I don't know if I'd pass that. Like – but that I was born that way. It's like, what day is it? It's like – I don't know. I gotta get my phone out. It's like, where's my calendar in my phone? I forgot.
All right, I got something.
Cool.
There was a city council meeting last night that I guess went pretty late, and there's the dumbest headline at Times Call about how they weren't supposed to have public comment, but then they did. But anyway, it led me to what I really care about is that they're trying to move or establish the 4th of July celebration this year at the Dickens Farm area. I'm stoked on this. A lot of people, I think, spoke against it. That's where the public comment came from. But
honestly, all I know about it is that people are speaking against it. I don't know what the actual plan is.
I know. Well, I think I think the idea is to launch the fireworks off from there, which, you know, this has been a moving target. It's forever and ever and ever been the fairgrounds and everybody can kind of like, which I kind of like love how the whole town comes out and then gets like stuck together after it's over and has to like make their way back. I have like vivid core memories about getting out, released from the golf course or whatever and taking forever to get home and it's like way past my bedtime. It's kind of fun, you know, it's a whole thing. Anyway, it's not been at the fairgrounds. Then it moved to Fox Hill. And it's, as a reminder, privately funded by the Kiwanis Club every year. So they have to kind of just work with what they can get. It's not like the city allows them previously to have it on the fairgrounds, but it was always funded by the Kiwanis. And so they got really difficult, I guess, to work with. And so the Kiwanis moved it over to Fox Hill. But Fox Hill kind of stinks because it's like, doesn't feel like it's in town. It feels like more like this like thing over happening on the side of town a little bit. Even though I think actually you can get more viewing spaces potentially.
Probably.
Around.
There's some good corridors out to that side.
Totally. And But then the golf course is like, no, we don't want you on the golf course. Where when it's in the middle of town, you can sit on Sunset and it's so cool.
We don't want you plebeians trampling down.
I get it. It's a private course. Like people pay a lot of money to keep it like nice. They don't want everyone. And the city course is like our old city course. Anyway, now they're talking about moving it to the Dickens Farm area, which I think is fantastic.
Where?
Okay, so it's down by the river and Main Street is basically St. Vrain River and Main Street. And they've done the St. Vrain Resilient St. Vrain mitigation down there and did the really cool little like rock pools and stuff. And then they have a farm area and it's also a nature preserve. So
this
is
like
the
behind Best Buy and...
Behind Best Buy down in the river area. And they actually have a farm, I think, called Dickens Farm Area or something like that. And it's lovely in the summer. Nice, it's well attended. People do the tubing and then you have the little like pools that kids can play in and stuff. But
they do the tubing.
The idea is for them to shoot off the fireworks from there and also have like a celebration, like a festival and like food trucks and whatever. And so the city would put up like 85K for the like festivals around festivities going on around it. And then Kiwanis, of course, would sponsor the fireworks, which is probably about the same cost. I have no idea.
And so they would have like the Longmont, like because the Longmont Symphony Orchestra was in Roosevelt last year.
That's different, I think. That's the Thompson Park. I had that same question. I still have that question, but I kind of think it's different because that's like a daytime thing. They have the Thompson Park, Longmont Symphony, and the chorale. But then this is more around the fireworks, I think.
If this is just the fireworks, and they're gonna have a big blast, like a big jubilee,
and they're thinking about doing a drone show beforehand.
Cool. So I think this is great.
It's cool. But what people were like all had their paintings in a twist about yesterday was the nature preserve area and shooting the fireworks off from it.
Ringing them out here. I'm angry.
Yes, I gather that there are some people who are very concerned about the nature area getting trampled.
Trampled, maybe the sound, whatever. So
understandable.
Good luck with that fight. I am very pro this festival.
I think if there's not like, ecological ramifications – then, yeah, great spot.
Right.
It's a super
cool seems
spot.
Perfect. And it's just trying to bring attention to this sort of up-and-coming, like, I'll call it lower downtown area and bring people to, I don't know. They said the South Martin area. Just there's a lot of cool stuff going on. I don't think
it's pretty cool on the other side of the tracks, everybody.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
No, it's pretty cool.
So
genuinely, actually, I like that area.
We all know.
It's one of my favorite parks in the city.
Yeah, gorgeous.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And if you're talking about biking and getting around, if you can get to like the Greenway or whatever, you can get right there.
I cannot wait until the Greenway detour near where we live is
so
done. It's
close near the Boston connection. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. My eyes rolled back into my head and then flipped all the way around again. I'm so like, oh, it's going to be done any day now because it's like
here's a great bet. What will be done first? The connection on the St. Vrain River, was it St. Vrain multi-use path first, or that or Winchell's opening?
Oh, did we do this one last week?
No, I'm just saying this is a good bet. What's the over under?
I had one. I posted one of these on my fake Tweety or whatever I think about. That was that. It was like Winchell's, that opening, or there was like four of them. And they were all just like, the train will be here.
Oh,
the train's going to be finished.
Oh, like, train's not. No. But no. These ones are like supposedly done, tomorrow. What's going to be first?
Yeah.
I think the Greenway will be done first.
Before Winchell's?
Yeah. I have to tell you that at this point, I don't think Winchell's will ever open, and I think – listen, Winchell's has been closed long enough that I have begun to wonder whether there's a financial model where it makes more sense to have Winchell's closed than open.
I have wondered that too. But for me, it was just like cashing in on the insurance, and not
– I mean, listen, I don't know the person. I don't know the situation. I don't want to slander anyone. But it seems a little weird to me that this place has been closed for 4 years.
It's sus 4 years. For sure. No, yeah, it's been – has it four?
I think it's been 4 years.
I don't think it's been that long.
I think it was closed before the pandemic or during the pandemic.
Really?
That's what I remember.
Dude, don't look at me. I don't know what day it is.
I don't know. That's
my
really –
the only way I have a tether to time is what song was playing on the radio.
I have to say I had an apple fritter at Landline the other day and it was almost as good.
Yeah.
That's meaningful to say that. It was almost as good.
I really want to go to Landline. I've never gotten around to it.
Oh, go get the apple fritter if you're – that's what I miss at Winchell's.
Because they do the potato donut, right? Is that their
thing? Yeah, but there's still gluten in it.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, I like an apple fritter. I can't eat them anymore, but I do like an apple fritter.
They're great.
I used to eat like trash when I was a kid, and apple fritters were a big part of that trash.
On that list.
Mm-hmm. Super good. Little Debbie's, Mountain Dew. Yeah. Yeah, buddy. And now I try Mountain Dew. It's like, my teeth.
Falling out.
You're just like, dude, I got old at one point. And you try to go like, I'm going to get the old nostalgia in a bottle out. It's like, ugh.
All right. You got anything else?
Probably some junk. Let's talk lunch.
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 Lunch. Lunch.
There it is. That's probably good. Right. I bet the listeners really enjoyed that.
Well,
that's
Shaquille,
a nice sound set.
You made the most amazing pitch for coming on to talk about this. So I'm excited. Just. Hit us with some education.
So the premise of Launch is that many people think that there is nothing that we can do about the cost of housing and that it will inevitably go up and that is just a force of nature. And the premise of Launch is that is not true. We control the cost of housing. We as a society, we as a city, we make choices that determines the cost of housing. We are currently making choices that are resulting in it going up. We can make choices that result in it going down instead. So that is what Launch does. And so we are advocating for change in the city to lower the cost of housing and also like make public transit better and all of the other things that you have to do to improve a city in order to just make it a better place to live that includes a lower cost of housing.
So you're like a grassroots organization, self-organized,
yeah,
just here at Longmont Residents?
Yeah. We are actually, we got our start through a post on Reddit, on the Longmont subreddit.
Really?
Yeah. So like Davide running a great community. So we started last year in March. I made two posts on Reddit. We had two meetings. It was more people showed up than I thought would. I think like 25 people showed up to the first meeting, which is pretty good for a post on a random internet forum. Mm-hmm. And we have been working on cost of housing stuff ever since as an organization. So like last summer, I've heard you guys talk about the charrettes at Bond Farm. Mm-hmm. So a person named Drew Sorrells and her husband Dan Sorrells, they're the ones who organized those charrettes.
Oh, yeah,
charrettes. True. Yeah.
I've been in touch with Drew. What up, Drew, if you're listening?
Yeah, so they weren't Launch members when they organized those charrettes, but they became Launch members. Mm. And we were like the pro-housing voice at those charrettes. Mm-hmm. So we've done stuff
What do you define as pro-housing?
So there are a number of small policy choices that happen along the way, right? The process of building housing is very boring, which is why it has gotten so convoluted. And there's just lots of little points in the process where housing can get derailed from what's permitted, right? So what's allowed at the very first place in the boring land development code that no one wants to read, to how a planning and zoning meeting works, right? Which is also very boring and no one really wants to go. And so then it gets to the administrative process inside the city where the planners have to work with the developer to make something happen. And there's all these little points where this very boring process can be very broken. And so we are advocating for policies that just make it easier to build more housing, because the reason the cost of housing is so high is because there's not enough of it.
Right.
And so if we
like
allow
to get to the day where you can even submit your permit, you're hundreds of thousands of dollars deep.
Right.
And so much time.
Right. And this process is just as wild and crazy for someone who is building a 300-unit development.
Totally.
To someone who wants to convert a single-family home to a duplex, like literally the smallest level of incremental change
is
just as complicated.
And you're kind of talking about that site plan review process, just going through planning and development.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've sat through multiple six-hour P&Z meetings where people are upset about something that's going to happen. And so there's like 100 people who show up to these things, and they all have something to say. And they have a First Amendment right to say what they believe, and I'm glad that they have it. But, they flood the meeting and the meetings get very long and things get very contentious. And those are all costs, right? Those are costs to the developer because it costs time, which makes housing more expensive.
And what are these people like? What's the gripe? How are they derailing or adding? I guess I'm trying to understand what is the platform?
So for example, a really common concern that people have, and I don't want anyone to hear anything negative in what I'm saying. I'm just
sure
because, people are very invested in their homes and their neighborhoods, and change can be scary, right? Especially absent a positive vision of change. And so I understand that people get scared. I don't agree with them, but, so for example, you might hear something like, but if you build all that housing over there, more people are going to live there. And so how am I going to park on the street in front of my house?
I see. People who are just generally anti or not in favor of moving any development forward come to these meetings and have a lot of things to say and sort of like derail the process.
Yeah. I mean, certainly
slow it down anyway.
Yeah. And many of them will tell you that they're not NIMBYs, but I do think that some of them display some NIMBY-like behavior.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for setting the scene.
Yeah.
So that's part of what's slowing it down. It's just this long, cumbersome process of moving through plan. But not just like public opposition. There's also just processes with the city, right, that are cumbersome as well.
Yeah. And those processes start much earlier than you would think. It's not even necessarily just what, application you have to fill out. It's what's fundamentally allowed, right? Like there are ordinances. There are laws that we have codified that say that where stuff is allowed to be.
Like zoning stuff.
Yeah, zoning stuff. And because that has gotten overly restrictive as a result of the way that cities have grown up for the past 75 years, you're just not allowed to build anything other than a single family detached home on 70% of the land in the city of Longmont. Mm-hmm. And we have a green belt, which means that fundamentally there is a finite number of homes that you can build in the city of Longmont. And unfortunately, that's not enough. And so you have to change the zoning.
So would you say you're generally in favor of like less, a little bit looser regulations on zoning and use?
I mean, The looser, yes, I think that a greater range of things should be allowed. But that's just because, like, I mean, listen, if you own a plot of land, you own that plot of land. It seems reasonable to me that as long as you are not creating a nuisance to your neighbors or a hazard to safety, there's a range of things that you should be allowed to do with that land. And I think that, right? So, you know, just this isn't just about big developers. It's about individual people who
– private property rights.
Yeah, because like if you're an – let's say that you're an elderly couple, right? And your kids have moved away and you don't need as much space in your home anymore. But you didn't save enough for retirement, right? Like right. You might want to build a duplex, right? Convert right. your home into a duplex to help it stay affordable for you to live in your neighborhood and grow old with the people that you know and love. That's a thing that we should allow, right? I don't think that that's crazy.
So, I mean, fundamentally, you're talking about like missing middle housing, right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
So explain to us the end and the end and then what the missing middle actually is.
So the way that most cities have developed housing and the way that the pattern has occurred is that there are basically two types of residential property that can be legally built in most of the United States. Either you can build a single family detached home or you can build what's called a 5+1 or right. It's a very dense type of housing and there's nothing in between that you can build. And so what happens is you build horizontally with a lot of single family homes because that's what can propagate cheaply horizontally. But then once you reach the limits or whatever, if you need to create more dense areas because you need more housing in a particular area or you need to accommodate lower income people in your community, right? Like service workers or I'm sad to say teachers, right? Like they need more cheaper – they need a cheaper place to live because unfortunately we don't pay teachers very much. And so as a result, those are the only two types of housing that you can get. All the stuff in between that makes it feel cohesive, all the range of things that allow you to gradually change the way that your neighborhood feel, like a townhome or a duplex or you know maybe a front property with an ADU – those are illegal in most cities, right?
But we have duplexes. I mean, we have duplexes all around Longmont. Are you saying we just don't have enough of them or it's really hard to make a duplex?
So the way that zoning the way that much of the city that is zoned single family works is that there are lots of areas like in Old Town, for example, right, where there's lots of multifamily that's pretty, you know, missing middle-y.
Yeah, so you have like a fourplex there and a sixplex and a duplex and then single.
Yeah, or a duplex conversion, right, or even some triplexes. Those were all built before the zoning was changed. And so now if like an earthquake were to happen or a flood or something like that, the only thing that you could rebuild on that property would be a single family home because the thing that is already there we have retroactively made illegal.
Okay. Interesting.
It's right. Zoning is wild, but it is also very boring. And so I get why people can't pay attention to it, but it has such a huge impact on the way that our city feels.
And our zoning code was updated in what, 2021? Is that right?
I mean, they're constantly tweaking the zoning code.
But didn't we have like a big overhaul in like 21?
2018 was, I think, 18. The big zoning change.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And that 2018 change was pretty good, right? We got things further along, but there is so much more that we need to do because the city of Longmont has 43,000 units of housing, right? The home, apartments, homes, whatever. According to the city, right, the city's own reports say we are short 14,000 units of housing. We need like more than a third more housing than we already have. That's a lot of housing, right? We're short a lot. And so you need to be able to build that housing all over the city as opposed to in just this area of change or this area of change, right? You really need to be able to build that kind of stuff across the city, which also will make it just feel better, right? It'll create cool areas in neighborhoods where change is happening and that change can make your neighborhood better, right?
So you're looking at like – because I lived in Europe for a while and I know, Anna, you've been – you know, we all have, but you go to the big cities, but I wound up living kind of on the outskirts of Munich. And the neighborhood that I lived in – was it's what we always call row housing, but I don't know what you'd actually call it. But the unit that I lived in, there's a unit downstairs, a unit upstairs, a backyard, and then you basically share walls with your neighbors. So it's one long unit, right? And that's semi-dense. That's not – and it's not like an overwhelming – the neighborhood is wonderful. I mean it was very quiet. A lot of people love their yards, the space. There was green spaces and open stuff. And I think people when you think about – housing density, I think that the idea of apartments and big blocks and like, oh, the riffraff is coming. Like that sort of thought, I think, really springs up a lot. And if you're good and you think about that in the European model, you can make lovely neighborhoods that are dense enough to support a bus line to get you to the other place or like those types of things. It doesn't have to be, you know, one or the other. And I think that's.
So what's your opinion on this legislation coming through where you can sort of override the zoning and use in municipalities at the state level?
So I'm really excited about a lot of the bills that are coming through at the state right now. Part of the challenge with housing affordability is that it's not just a city problem. It's a regional problem that becomes a state problem. Even if, let's say, Longmont completely eliminated zoning, you could build a 19-story apartment anywhere in the city you wanted. Mm-hmm. The cost of housing still wouldn't go down because the cost of housing isn't just affected by Longmont. It's affected by people in Boulder and people in Loveland and people in Frederick, because those places' cost of housing is going up because Longmont can't build enough housing for the people who want to live or work in Longmont. And so in order to really fix this problem, you have to take action at the state level. And so as a result, I'm really excited about the state taking action on this.
But do you think it's an infringement on private property rights, what they're doing with the being able to come in or even just like municipal rights?
I mean, there is an issue of local control, but I mean, federalism is a thing. And I think it's a reasonable thing for the state to say, listen, our municipalities haven't done a good job of managing this problem. We need to step in as a state.
I think what they're coming up with at the state level is better.
I don't think that action at the state level is a substitute for action at the local level, but I think that unless you have a state level solution, the problem can't be fixed.
Mm-hmm. And there's a couple other issues that crop up here. One, I mean, you can build as many units as you want in the city, and if people still want to move to that city, you'll never catch up to the amount that you want, right? And then two, housing prices are sticky. Like, I own my home. Right now it's valued at some absurd amount because housing values have gone up. You know, my house has tripled since I bought it or something. But I'm not going to go, oh, well, housing prices come down, so now I want to sell it. That doesn't make sense. Or it's worth this. I have to live somewhere. I don't want to move, get into this whole new loan situation with interest rates and stuff. I'm not going to move. So, like, it's sticky. Like, I haven't invested. Like, that's my future. That's my – right? And this isn't just for me. It's for everybody that's involved in owning assets of that size. Everybody leverages themselves massively to buy a home. It's the largest source of intergenerational wealth in the country, I think, by a long shot. So, like, it's so convoluted, but you do, I think, need to take action if you want to have this on a bigger level. And I'm going, like, yeah, I want to see change. I also really like my neighborhood as it is, right? But I definitely think there's room for change in my neighborhood and elsewhere, and there's definitely room for change in new developments. And that's one of the things that really chaps McKeister is, like, you have to have a certain amount of land per unit or something like that type of thing. Or, oh, it's prohibited, this, that, the next thing. And it's like the model that we have for the area that we live in doesn't really work. You know, if you live in where I grew up, there is endless land to develop for these. And we don't even get into the sort of Ponzi scheme that is like single family development. But
on that note, what do you think about the Greenbelt around? Do you think this is...
I think the Greenbelt's amazing. It is a gift that our children's children's children are going to look back on and say, I can't believe that my ancestors did this, and I'm so glad that they did.
Just like, in short, you think we should make it easier to promote density within Longmont?
Well, just from the environmental perspective, I think allowing cities to densify is incredibly important because the environmental tax that comes with sprawl is immense, right? Building horizontally is really taxing on the environment from asphalt and roads and infrastructure.
And
water usage, right? Mm-hmm. But if we allow cities to densify, right? People who live in cities emit less greenhouse gases. People who live in cities use less water. People who live in cities are healthier because they walk more, right? And so I think this makes total sense.
Do your objectives overlap with Prosper Longmont quite a bit? How are you guys aligned or different?
Yeah, we're actually really good friends with Prosper Longmont. And Prosper Longmont's one of our partners on our upcoming book club, actually.
Oh, okay. So tell us about your book club.
Yeah. So one of the things that we want to do as we, you know, try and change the cost of housing in Longmont is we need to bring the public along with us. And we need to help people learn more about this issue because, you know, I think that, you know, knowledge is power. So one of the things that we're doing is we're starting a book club, and it is totally open to everyone in the city of Longmont, or I guess outside the city of Longmont, if anyone wants to commute to this.
Take the bus.
Yeah. And maybe they agree with us. Maybe they disagree with us. Maybe they are concerned about change, right? we want the opportunity to share some ideas and honest conversation. And maybe, you know, we won't agree on everything, but to just have an honest conversation with people about, like, what can we do about the cost of housing? So there's a new book coming out from an organization called Strong Towns, which is nationally known on this issue. Mm-hmm. It's called Escaping the Housing Trap. It's by Chuck Marone and Daniel Herridges. And we think that this book is the timing of this book coming out, it comes out on April 23rd, is super fortuitous.
A Tuesday.
Yes, it is a Tuesday. And the book is about why housing is expensive, right? And it's in part because it talks about the relationship between the financialization of housing and how housing has been financed and how that's different now from it was, you know, even in like 1900, right? And the gradual change in that process that has come with the change in the form of the American city. And it talks about the tension between that and relying on housing cost inflation as a society, you know, sort of underlie our banking system with the fact that people need a place to live, right? And there is a tension between the idea that housing is a good investment and people need a place to live and therefore housing is shelter first.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think I know of what you're talking about. So the model would be very much modeled after Europe, Northern Europe in particular probably. And I think the guy that does this, the YouTube series, focuses a lot on like the Dutch model with bikeability and those
things. You're thinking of Not Just Bikes, I think.
Not Just Bikes. I think that's where the original Strong Towns came from. It was the same guy or somebody did an offshoot off of that. There was some interplay with that. But I remember getting from that into the Strong Towns thing. And the guy was discussing Strodes. Is that
his? Yeah. Yeah. So Strodes is a term that was coined by Chuck Marone, who's the founder of Strong Towns. Mm-hmm. I think Strong Town has been around since like 2008.
Oh, okay.
They're really one of the original organizations doing advocacy on this issue.
So I think it's kind of worth stopping for a sec to talk about like what is a Strode and why is it, you know, what's going on there?
So a Strode was coined by Chuck Marone, the guy who founded Strong Towns, and it's a road that is trying to be both a local street that connects people to each other and people to, you know, neighbors and local businesses, with a road which is something that is intended to carry people long distances, mm-hmm. Quickly between two places. And when you have a road that tries to do both of those functions, it winds up doing neither one of them particularly well. Hoover is a great example of a Strode, right? So you know that business, that little strip mall, it's at Hoover and Nelson.
Yeah, the one that's like the F45 or something now, whatever's in there.
Yeah, the one that also used to have the Longmont Bakery in it and something supplies. Before that, yeah. And something before that. Yeah, I mean that shopping center kills businesses. I don't know what the deal is.
I do. You can't get in out of there. It's a terrible place to go.
Yeah. Yeah, like because it's a Strode. Because they're trying to put businesses there that serve the local community, but the local community can't get there unless they drive in a car. And if they're in a car already, why would they go there? Yeah, so Strodes are terrible for the community. And Strodes are a feature of design that is also makes our cities just feel less welcoming.
And I think this is like part of why all the time I'm grousing about Nelson, and it's like, oh yeah, all of that looks the same and you can't get in and out of any of it. That's the thing. Or on 119, you know, as you're going through town and it's Ken Pratt or whatever, like a lot of that stuff's really difficult to get in and out of, and you have to really want to go to that place because like navigating from one side to the other, it's, and you can't do it on foot or on bike because you're taking life in your own hands. Like you see people doing it, it's like, ugh.
So part of what the book discusses is concepts like this and really getting to solutions. Like what aspects of this are in the control of the community? Because, you know, so every time I speak in front of city council, something that I try to
every
say.
Every time? How often does that happen?
Honestly, more than I would prefer. I've spent a lot of my time in city council meetings in the past year. One of the things I say is the cost of housing is a choice. We can choose to lower it, right? And this book, one of the things that it says is that it's a local community change that can be made. And there are lots of things that your municipality can do. And, you know, even if there isn't state action, even if, there isn't regional action, you can make changes at the local level, like making your community more walkable and bikeable, mm-hmm. and lowering the amount of land that's dedicated to cars, to just sort of scale them back to what's actually used.
So give us like 3 to 5 things that the city could do like reasonably, cost effectively, and like soon that would be
that would make a difference and move towards these ends.
Yeah, and I don't want to give the impression that we can make it's not going to be tomorrow. I'm sorry to say, right?
Sure, sure.
But
accessible, reasonable things.
Yeah, totally. So one of those things is that the city could change how it zones land in the city and allow for very minor incremental densification in single family rent neighborhoods. Like, for example, allowing every ADUs everywhere in the city, right? And this is a thing that the state has to do to override HOA rules, but the state looks on progress. So allowing that very minor incremental densification is a tangible action that the city can take, and it's very doable. Actually, another one that started and the process just got started last night is lowering parking minimums throughout the city. So in most commercial properties, the city has parking maximums, but not in residential neighborhoods. So we're not getting parking maximums in residential neighborhoods yet, which would basically say that, you know, if you want three parking spaces, go ahead and build them, right? You know, it's your property. You can do whatever you want. But if you want to have two or one or maybe even zero, that's okay, right? If you can make that work in your life, you should be allowed to use your land that way. So the city is lowering – so we're not getting maximums, but we are getting lower minimums, which is going to really make it more possible to build – do the incremental densification.
Yeah, and they'll have to like put a parking structure instead of more housing on a given project or whatever.
And the funny thing is that this will also result in neighborhoods that feel better because part of what is – terrible about single-family housing and the feeling of having that single-family housing right next to a gigantic apartment building is very often those gigantic apartment buildings have to have an insane amount of parking. And so it just feels like an asphalt jungle. But now developers will get to build like an appropriate amount of parking mm-hmm. and not, you know, make neighborhoods feel so bad.
I mean, even South Main Station didn't have – I mean, this is – it's been a gripe, but maybe you would call it a feature. There is not really that much parking mm-hmm. over there. They have like one per unit or something, and then you have these commercial that it's hard to fill the commercial because they're worried that people won't come because there's not enough parking or whatever. And so we're in this like funny transitional period right now where you have a younger generation coming up that doesn't have as many cars or want to drive as much, and you have an existing population with all the money and all the spending power that's a priority for them. It's hard.
Yeah, and it's funny because, I mean, those apartments are once they're full, like the most convenient place to buy your groceries is going to be the place that is literally you're standing on top of it already. A grocery store is going to kill there, right? Like, yeah, it should be there. There should be one there.
I mean, I would love to have one. I think it's always about density. Like all of these conversations about what can support what is density when it comes to how close is your bodega, your grocery store, your bus line. Will you get trains and mass transit? It's all about density, right? So, and it has to be, I think it has to be smart. And you talk about the incremental. I think incremental is a piece that gets glossed over. And you go, oh, okay, well, if you're going to be in.
Thanks for pointing that out, Brady.
Yeah.
It's true.
Because if you're in Old Town, and you go, oh, God, you know, this guy, and it's a little bit more. It's a little bit more. It's like, it doesn't feel so bad. But if somebody were to say, I want to build a, you know, a 10-story tower block in the lot next to me, well, I'd probably be looking to sell. Like, that's not the neighborhood that I wanted to live in. You know, I bought my house where I bought it for a reason.
Right.
And so I want that neighborhood to have that feel with the, you know, this, that, and the next thing. And so I think you can work, you know, like the city can flow and have different pieces, but we need entry points into housing for different people. And I think when you're talking about people that are younger, like, look, I bought my house. I got lucky with the timing. And I just got lucky. That's it. And because of that, I own a home and it's a great asset. But people that came after me, they are not lucky, and they may not even be able to buy a home. So there's a lot of impetus to change the system.
So let's talk about Bond Farm, and I have two questions, one for each of you. Brady, if Bond Farm had been constructed literally right next to you, do you think you've been in as much favor of it?
I personally struggle with things like Bond Farm because it's fairly dense for the area, you know? So that to me, like my head says yes, my heart says no. And if I had to weigh in on it, I'd say, yeah, I think that it's like overall it's a good thing it should be put in. But there is part of me that likes to live in a really quiet spot where nobody else goes. I like to be left alone. And so that for that would be difficult.
Yeah.
So, you know, I struggle with this stuff as much as anybody.
And for you, what do you think would be – frame the like – most compelling argument for the naysayers of Bond Farm? And maybe Brady just kind of did it because you were really involved in that, it sounds like, and you heard a lot of – I mean, because I'm like, what? Why were people – like parking, traffic? What were the really actual compelling arguments with substance on the other side of that?
So the arguments that the people on the other side would make, the first one was parking. And so and their way of doing that was to ask for 4.5 parking spaces per unit in Bond Farm. Mm-hmm. And then their other concern was view blocking, and they were worried about, drainage, because it's a pretty steep site. And so, there's a little bit of a hill there. But in my opinion, it's change. People are scared of change. And I understand why, because, change can be scary, especially if you've lived in a neighborhood for 30 or 40 years and it's always been this way. And maybe you don't want it to be different than how it is right now. But I honestly think that's just because we do such a bad job of articulating a positive vision of change, right? The things that we're going to get that are going to be the ways in which having more people and having more homes in our community will make life better. So I live like a block from the site. I was really excited for it because I want a bodega in my neighborhood, and it's zoned RMN, which means that there can be live work in there. And I would like there to be a little bodega or a coffee shop in my neighborhood that I can walk to and that, serves the neighborhood, right? But it's a place like – there's a lot of dog walking in the neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. I would love to be able to get a coffee on my dog walk, right? That would be great. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I know. I always laugh doing commercial leasing. I mean, everybody's wanting more grocery stores and wanting more of these amenities downtown, and the argument's not there until the density is there, and mm-hmm. you can be sure that you're going to get the support you need to pay that rent. Mm-hmm. It's hard.
That's kind of the thing, because you look at you can have a low density, medium density, and then like tier up as you go, and you can have one next to the next and it doesn't feel so bad. But like even when I was in Germany, we talk about the green belt, we talk about bus transit. I lived in that type of community where downtown there was, I don't know, it was a 5 or 8 story tower block. And then there was relatively, mid-density, mid-high density other stuff, but it wasn't this like supermax kind of like. And so I lived in a cute little spot, and then the town just ended. That was it. You're done. That's right. And then
you got your little dwarfs out there.
Like a little path that you could just take, and then you walk to this little tiny lake, and there's oh my God, it's Germany. Like you go to a little lake, and there's like a little bar, right? There's like a little bar and little pastries and stuff, whatever they're selling. And you just get a beer and sit on the lake and like, but then you can walk home and it's 10 minutes. And I think that was such a lovely thing, because that town was like footprint wise a quarter or even less the size of the town that I grew up in, but had the same population, but it had buses. It had access to the subway system to get to the big city. But it was still felt isolated and quiet and sleepy, yeah. And it was wonderful.
And I actually want to make another plug for like just how incremental change really can be, and how very incremental change can make life better. So a friend and neighbor of mine used to have an empty shed in his backyard. And so he converted it into something that was called the garage grocer. And it was an unattended empty shed, and they'd put farm fresh eggs in there and like vegetables from the garden. And he'd do some – he'd have some just whatever sort of made sense for a garage grocer, right? And there was literally a Tupperware that you'd put cash in and pull it in out, or you could Venmo him or his wife. And that's a little business. The garage grocer no longer exists, because someone from the city of Longmont came and talked to him and said, I'm sorry, sir, you live in a single family zone neighborhood. You are not allowed to operate a business here. But I mean, I think the garage grocer was making the neighborhood a better place, right? And so that's really how small change can be, and how even tiny – what seems like a tiny change can make an amazing difference in people's lives. And so it truly can be very incremental.
Hmm. Okay. I think we're going to run out of time, but mm-hmm. make mm-hmm. any final plugs for launch, because I know you're not just about housing, right? There's some other town and other development – municipal development stuff that you work on.
Yeah,
right?
we're interested in lots of issues related to quality of life in Longmont, and that includes housing and public transit and bikeability and walkability and pedestrianism and all of those things. So the plug that I'll make is for the book club. We would love to have people sign up and come in and join the discussion and just talk more about these issues as a community. Our first meeting is April 22nd at 6:30 p.m. It's at Longmont Public Media, which is at 457 4th Avenue, where we are sitting right now. You can sign up for the book club. You don't have to sign up if you don't want to. But if you sign up, you'll get reminder emails from us and, previews of upcoming conversation and additional resources and that kind of thing. You can sign up for the book club at our website at launchlongmonthousing.org. You can get the book from the Longmont Public Library, or you can buy it at Barbed Wire Books. Also, there's this guy named Jeff. He started a little bookstore online. You can get it from there too if you want. But, you know, the Longmont Public Library does have it if you don't want to buy it. The book is not out yet. So the book comes out on April 23rd, which is a Tuesday. We're having our first meeting on April 22nd before the book comes out. And the first meeting is going to be, what are the things that you need to know in order to get the most out of reading this book? Little things about Longmont history and development patterns and just like some basic definitions. Like Brady and I just talked about what a strode is. You know, we'll give you just the information you need to get the most out of reading the book and really prepare you for our next meeting, which is going to be in May, where we'll get back together and we'll talk about, okay, what was section one like? Mm-hmm. And then we'll give you the information you need before you read part two.
Sweet. And I have to say, if it's even a fraction as delightful as talking with you about these issues, which, you know, you're obviously well-researched and extremely reasonable to speak to and are willing to be open and listen, I think this will be a really successful endeavor. So,
yeah. I should say we have partners, right? We're not just doing this by ourselves. Prosper Longmont, the organization that another pro-housing organization in the city, is one of our partners. The other partner that we have is Longmont Public Media, actually.
Sweet.
So Longmont Public Media is going to record the book club meetings so that we can, you know, share them on YouTube and that kind of stuff and you know, even extend it further out. But we really do want people to come to the book club meetings in person because the discussion and getting to know people in the community is really where we're going to make strides on this one.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Cool. Shaquille, thank you so much for coming on, sharing all of these interesting things you're up to. This is so cool. This is how change happens. It's great.
Thank you for allowing me to fanboy about this podcast in person.
Yeah, cool. I'm surprised people listen at all. So, hey, it's awesome.
I know. We're always like, oh, really?
I know you from the podcast. What? Really?
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks to Andy Epler and David Cutter Music for our intro and outro music. Follow us on all the places you listen and shoot us an email if you got something to say about housing or anything at sidedishlongmont@gmail.com. Thanks, Shaquille. Thanks, Brady.
Thank you.